I'm Steve McLeod, and you are listening to The Community Lounge, the podcast where community managers from the video games industry tell their story, talk about the challenges they face, and share tips to help other community managers do their job better.
You're Greg Cummings. You're currently community and content manager at Far From Home, which is a Polish studio, but you are, as you told me, you're in the United Kingdom. And yes. It's a role you just officially started, like, maybe last week.
So I've been community manager at Far From Home since like September 2021, so just over 4 years. And you know, in the world of game dev, especially indie game dev, you wear a lot of hats. So, you know, I'm community manager, but I also work with marketing, I do social media, I do content creation, as well as managing our community. So the title change now to community and content manager is just sort of like, there's a few new sort of role changes, but it's mostly acknowledging what I do.
That's nice.
More accurately, yeah.
And they doubled your pay at the same time, right?
Maybe.
but it really touches.
Nice. It would be nice.
It really touches on such an important point, is that community managers are often kind of jack of all trades. They have to do lots and lots of different things. It's not just about being on Discord all day.
No, it's not. You really do have to manage your time like really effectively, because you are right. It's a lot of it is spending time talking to players and sort of engaging and listening to what they have to say. But at the same time, you also have to manage time effectively, because there are other things that need doing. There's things for the studio, whether that be simply recording something for TikTok, or that could be getting a couple of gifts together for a blog because you're about to do an update. There's all kinds of things going on all the time. So you really have to manage your time effectively, because community manager can mean many different things. And it differs from studio to studio.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, there's not really a standard definition, is there?
No. When you're applying for a community manager role, I'm sure we'll get onto this, you do sort of really have to, I know it sounds cliche, a lot of people say this, but you do have to tailor your CV for specifically what they're asking for, because some people, especially for large studios, it is, you will hire yourself a community manager, maybe a team of community managers even. Mm-hmm. And then you've also got social media managers, content managers, etc., marketing managers. But in smaller studios where you've got a team of, like, say, maximum of 30 people, that's pretty much just one dude, one girl, and just, maybe like one marketing manager, and that's it. You've really got to sort of tailor it to what it is they're looking for.
That's really good advice for, I think, any job application, but specifically for community management jobs. Hey, tell me about Far From Home. It's how many people work there?
We're in that second category I mentioned. We are a team of about just under 30 people now. We've been around officially since 2020. We officially formed during the pandemic. Uh-huh. That was in Wrocław, Poland. The team prior to that was made up of AAA devs mostly, who worked at Techland. A few people worked at other places like Larian, CD Projekt, from all over sort of AAA Polish game dev for the most part. A lot of them working on Dying Light, Dying Light 2, the Divinity series, Witcher series, you name it. And eventually they decided that they wanted to sort of break away from that AAA life that they've been doing for so long. And they formed Far From Home. I think the play on the name was basically sort of saying, like, they're coming out of their comfort zone. You know, they're far from what they're used to. And that's how it was formed from that, which is an ironic name, really, because during the pandemic, everybody was working from home.
So home.
They've never been closer to home, yeah, geographically. That's how it started, yeah.
And their big game, their big success is Forever Skies, of which you're the community and content manager.
You can call me just community manager. It's fine. Yeah. I don't mind.
So you're alone in doing community in that team of about 30 people?
Yeah. So on the marketing side, there's three of us, really. So there's the marketing brand manager, who's also one of the business owners, Pavel Yevor. There's also myself, and we also have a PR manager as well, who is with us sort of part-time. He also works with a few other Polish dev companies. Well, actually, not Polish, but some, you know, various other companies. So yeah, for the most part, it is just me doing community content, social media, etc.
And how did you get to be working for a Polish company while you're in the United Kingdom?
it's a long story, but it's we have so a mutual friend of ours. Shout out to Jarvis Tasker. At the time,
he was on this podcast a few episodes ago.
There we go. Yes, of course. So there we go. So at the time, so she was working for Untold Tales, which is an indie publisher, again based in Wrocław, and she told me that this other studio was looking for a community manager in the coming weeks, coming months. Me at the time, I was working full time in resale. But what I was doing alongside work, my full-time job was, as well as also being a dad, was also being a streamer and content creator with a group of friends of mine in the local area. That was a YouTube channel called Enigmatic Play, but we also did Twitch streaming as well. So shout out to Ed and Johan, if they ever listen to this. they were doing streaming content creation, so I joined them and I was helping them do the video game side of things because they covered media in a wider sense. On top of all that, I was also doing unofficial community management for one of my favorite YouTube channels called PlayStation Access, who are the official PlayStation YouTuber for PlayStation UK. So I was doing unofficial sort of community and social work for them. So we had a fan,
unpaid,
an unofficial
or paid?
Fan account. No, unpaid. All of this was unpaid. Was just doing their social media on Twitter, you know, when they did new video, new content, additional posts. And I was also modding their unofficial Discord as well, because they didn't have their official an official one. So we as a community created one for them. So I was doing all of these things, just trying to get my foot in the door, which is something I advise anyone who wants to be a community manager, is you don't need to necessarily get into the industry officially in a paid capacity to start gaining experience. You can do all of these things to start gaining experience. So I was doing that, and Jarvis gave them my name, said this guy wants to be a community manager. And I hadn't applied for anything yet at the time. I was thinking I want to do another year of sort of unpaid, sort of like voluntary type work. They reached out. I went for an interview, then I went for another interview after that, a few other hoops to jump through, and eventually I found my way into my first official job in the industry. It was about a sort of 2-3 month process. It was a lot of work to get it done, but it got there in the end, and yeah, I've never looked back.
That's a nice story. I'm a little bit interested. Well, I am interested to know what it's like for you being in a different country. I assuming they mostly work in office, or is it a completely remote company?
No, they do have a hybrid now. So when I first joined, it was just purely 100% working from home. But they did actually open a studio in Wrocław a couple of years ago. So now most of the people who live in Poland, well, live in the local vicinity, do half at home, half in the studio. Some people do full studio. Some of us do like 90% at home, i.e. myself, who lives in the UK. And we have one of our programmers also lives in Portugal. So I'm not the only one who's also from a different country. But we do go to Poland on a pretty regular basis. So I go to Poland maybe 3 times a year, sometimes 4. That might be for various things. That might be for large updates or anniversaries, you know, celebrate 3, 4, 5 years of far from home for various reasons, or sometimes when we have events on like in Poznan or Krakow, I'll go over then. But yeah, it is, like I say, 95% working from home for me.
Okay, so when you go to Poland, you're working in the office for a few days or a couple of days.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah.
So I'm curious to know what it's like for your community management role being mostly remote. Do you think that makes it harder or easier? Does it give you unique challenges?
It can do, yes, because sometimes, you know, when you've got, for example, there's a social post that you want to put out there for a particular reason, like you've got to be very... with community management, with the social media side of it, sometimes you have to be very reactive. Like if there's a new trend that's happening on Twitter or Blue Sky, and you want to get your game, you want to get your post out there that's following this trend, a prime example is a couple of years ago, you might remember a trend where people were going, our game, if it was made in 2007, and it was literally just your trailer to What I've Done by Linkin Park. Sometimes you just want to do a thing and get it out there. But first of all, you want to just double check that you're not going to, you know, pardon my language, will piss anyone off by doing this first. So sometimes if I was there in studio, I could just go, this good? We're good? Okay, let's go. Whereas I've got to go, hey, man, are we okay with this? To be fair, in recent years, I've become a lot more confident and I understand our brand a lot more. So now I feel a lot more confident just to do it. But in my first couple of years as a community manager, I didn't have that confidence of, I knew the brand, but not as strongly as I probably wanted to. And so I would always double check and say, hey, am I good to post this first? And that would mean having to wait a couple of hours, maybe sometimes for a response, because we're all busy people. Whereas if I was in a studio, I could just go, hey, this thing, good? Okay, let's post. So yeah, it has challenges from time to time there, but we're all connected constantly. You know, like if you look now, like even it's a fact actually that this was studied in 2024, but 50% of the people, just over 50% of the people working in game dev are still are working remotely still.
I didn't know that. That's really interesting. I mean,
we're a few years removed since then, but I can't imagine it's changed drastically in that year and a half since the study was done. I think at that time, it was something like 58% people were still working remotely or in hybrid. So, you know, we're all connected either through Slack or through Discord, whatever it is you might use. Yeah, so it's not a huge challenge, but there are a few niche issues with the community management role, like I've just explained, that do present unique challenges. But yeah, for the most part, it's fine.
So my company, Feature Upvote, is completely remote. And
yeah,
that has advantages, but I do sometimes miss the ability to frequently get together and just have lunch or work on a problem physically located in the same room where we can just draw on a whiteboard or get around a screen. Definitely. I miss that.
Yeah.
But I also like the ability to take my daughter to school every day, etc.
I completely agree. I've got two children myself, so like the fact that I can just sort of sign out for an hour or two whenever it's needed is a real plus. But that's why what's so great about hybrid. It's great when I do get into the studio, and it is just nice to see everyone's faces, these people that I work with day in, day out. And it does get to lunchtime. It's like, hey, let's go out. Let's just go and just have a nice time. Just talk about games, and just have that sort of that camaraderie. You know, it's nice. Yeah. I think the hybrid role is certainly best of both worlds.
Yeah. Let's go into some of the questions I gave you in advance that we might discuss. One that's really got my curiosity already is I wanted to know if there was a memorable positive moment you've had as a community manager, and you wrote our charity work. What is that? I haven't heard of something like this in a game studio before.
So I really struggled to think of like a very specific thing related to community management. But things like, there's lots of little victories you get with that. So I tried to think of like one very specific thing that I've done within my job role. And that is, again, like you just said, our charity work. So Far From Home has three goals. And one of those goals is generally just to make the world a better place. To support that goal that we have as a studio is we partnered with two charities, but I'll talk about just the one for now. And that's WDC, Wild and Dolphin Conservation. They're a brilliant charity registered here in the UK. And they support, you know, marine life and, you know, make sure that, you know, whales and dolphins are all free as best they can, you know, fighting all these causes where whaling is still, well, you know, hunting is still apparent, or they're being used for sakes of entertainment in aquariums and things like that. So they're fighting all of these real big issues over here. And what we did was we reached out to them, the good friends of mine now, called Sally Ward, a few years ago, and we said we wanted to work with you. And what we did was we created what it is essentially is it's like a decorative artifact that you can have, that you can craft in our game. Our game is a survival game, so you have a base, which is an airship, and you can decorate that however you like, by finding things in the world or, you know, adding different modules. We basically created like a globe which had some holographic whales swimming in it, and you can change the color of it. It costs basically like $2.99, and 100% of that net revenue goes all to WDC. and that goes towards their conservation work. And we announced in December, just gone, that as of then, we've raised just over $50,000 just from selling that one artifact.
That's like, astonishing.
That to me was just such a huge thing, because it's a huge thing that we want to try and make a difference. We believe games are more than just entertainment. We believe they can be used to change the world for good. And that announcement, $50,000 to charity, to WDC, really sort of made you feel like you made a difference, you know? So that was one thing for me that really made me very proud of the work that we do.
That's fantastic. And I love that it's not just, oh, we'll donate them, you know, some money, but it's actually doing something that raises awareness within the game and makes money for the charity at the same time. It's really clever.
Yes. So the players get something, they get a cool artifact to decorate their airship with that they can interact with. The net revenue goes directly to them. We don't see a penny of it. It's a great cause. And like I said, we did also launch a second charity DLC in December as well. And that was with War Child, another UK-based charity, which basically protects children in countries with conflict. And we've done a similar artifact for them as well. That one only launched in December. So hopefully we achieve the same level of heights of success with that one.
Oh, fantastic. What about a challenge you faced as a community manager? Something that stands out in your memory where, like, it was maybe harder than you thought this job was going to be, or something like that?
Yeah. So an example of that, you will face into these challenges a lot as a community manager. But when we launched into 1.0, just prior to that, our Steam reviews were sat at very positive, you know, around the sort of like mid 80% positive reviews. Unfortunately, when we launched into 1.0, we saw a lot of those reviews slip, and we basically went into sort of the mid 60% mixed reviews, essentially. And a lot of that was like, it also, bear in mind as well, when we launched into 1.0, we also launched onto PlayStation for the first time. Uh-huh. And those reviews have always stayed strong. It's currently at four. Last time I checked, I think it's at something like 4.35 or 4.34 stars out of five. Basically over four out of five, basically. So those strong reviews have always been pretty strong, but on Steam they slipped, and I think a lot of that was maybe our early access fans who had higher expectations, who expected more, and they didn't necessarily achieve those expectations. So the biggest challenge was really just sort of like swallowing pride, not taking everything that was being said to personally, and just listen to what people have to say, because a lot of it is reading what players actually have to say, reading through those negative reviews, understanding what the common themes are. And from there, we essentially made an action plan about what it was we were going to do, because, you know, you find that even though it is hard to read when people are, you know, bashing your game, what you have to understand is a lot of these people are doing this because they care. And that is the most important thing. The worst thing is when people leave a negative review and they don't write anything. They leave a negative review and they'll probably just put mid or something like that. There's nothing you could do with that. You have to just go, okay, fine, whatever. But when people are leaving paragraphs on their Steam reviews, this is what I didn't like and why. Those people care about your game. They care about your project. They probably even care about you as a team. And that is huge. That is something that is you should absolutely cherish, really, because it means, hey, this is an action plan. This is what we can do better. And we actually did put out a blog post. We created a graph. We said these are the four key areas that people have complained, that people have left negative reviews for. PC Gamer picked it up and said, oh, okay, these guys have actually acknowledged that things weren't as good as what they hoped it would be. They did a whole article on it, which was very surprising.
Wow,
they acknowledged our honesty, and the community did too. So we've actually released two large updates since then, since April 2025, as well as a bunch of, you know, hot fixes and patches. We've done two major content updates, and we've got a third one coming up in a couple of months' time. So yeah, that was probably the biggest challenge I've had to face. There was a lot of stuff to read through, and a lot of it, you know, you do take to heart. You just try not to take that to heart, because you can't. Don't take it personally. It's not aimed at you. It's aimed at the product that you work on. It's not. They're not saying, I hate this game because Greg sucked. They're not saying that, you know? You can't take it personally. You just got to read through it, understand what it's saying, show empathy, understand where they're coming from. And it does make handling that a lot easier. But yeah, the updates are coming through now, and the reviews have since then gone back up. We are back up mostly
That's
positive.
Good to hear.
Early 70%. Yeah. So we're doing the right thing, we believe, by our players. We try and listen to them, understand their issues that they have, look through our future of our board.
And this is probably, I should just interject here and say, this was a coincidence, but when I approached Greg, or we approached each other at being on the show, I didn't actually realize Greg was working for one of our customers. It's completely coincidental, but yes, Far From Home is a Future Upvote customer.
We are
back to your story, Greg.
No, that's okay. we created a plan through that and things are going great. We named the series of updates Echoes, because a lot of it was around creating essentially more content, more stories about people who lived in this post-apocalyptic world that we created. We've added side quests with every single part. So there's three biomes in the game. So part one was updating biome one with side quests and a bunch of other content. Same with part two was biome two, and biome three will be the same. And that name came from me. I pitched that name, so I'm very proud.
Nice. That's where you're the content manager part of your job, right?
Right, that's it. Yeah. It's but again, it's like that thing where when you work in indie game dev, you wear many hats. And marketing, it just happens to be one of those things. So yeah, it's a real honor.
What I really like about this story is that you listened and you showed you're listening. I have a little talk I present from time to time on how to manage feedback for video games, how to get it and what to do with it. And that thing of actually acknowledging what people are saying and showing that you're listening is the part that is so essential.
Yeah, absolutely is. Because if you don't listen, if you show that you don't care what people have to say, then, hey man, good luck selling your next project because people aren't going to trust you.
So did you have any strategies or techniques you did to stop it from feeling like it was a personal attack when you were going through reviews?
There's no real strategy. You just got to remind yourself that, like I say, that people are writing stuff because they care. And if that means taking a break every hour and having to walk around going for a cup of coffee, then, do what you need to do. But just you have to keep that in mind. There's no real sort of strategy other than, This is the reality of working in game dev. You've just got to grin and bear it sometimes, and not take it to heart. There is no strategy other than like I just said. Unless anybody has any other strategies out there, I'm willing to listen to them. But that's what I do, and it works for me.
It's tough. Yeah, it's tough. It's the direction where burnout starts coming in. So if you have to do that stuff too often by yourself,
yeah.
Hey, listeners, a short interruption. When I'm not hosting the Community Lounge, I run Feature Upvote, a platform for managing player feedback. When you use Feature Upvote, your players can submit and upvote suggestions to improve your game in a single place. This gives you the data you need to develop a game that meets player expectations. And you can say goodbye to the confusion of trying to keep up with feedback scattered across discussions on Discord and Steam and Reddit. Learn more at featureupvote.com.
Hey, you mentioned you have two kids. How old are your kids?
So I've got a 14-year-old daughter and I've got an 11-year-old son.
That, of course, probably is getting to that phase in life where it doesn't require quite as much as energy as it did when they were younger. But how do you manage to balance family life and being a present father with your community manager life when the community wants attention 24 hours a day? Do you have any rules or guidelines that you use for yourself there?
Yeah, you do have to remember, even though like this for me was a dream job, like this is what I wanted to do for a long time, you still have to remember at the end of the day, it is a job. It is a job that you do. It's what you do to earn money. You have set hours that you work, and you make that sort of known with your community as well. Like I'm around constantly, and if there's an emergency, I'm there. I have Discord on my phone. I have Slack on my phone. So I'm constantly reachable if necessary. But my advice is to get a really strong team of mods behind you to manage some of your platforms, because I can't thank my mod team enough. They are absolutely an incredible bunch of people. Yeah, I try and do my best to make sure that I've got a good balance between people who are in Europe and also people who are in the USA to try and cover that 24-hour period as best I can. And a lot of it is just people coming in, like, because they've got a bug or they've got an issue. But if there are any major issues that ever occur, then I'm there and I'm on hand. Apart from that, it's just they know that I, you know, they know my working hours. They know when I'm going to be around, when I'm, you know, I'm approachable 24/7. My door is always open, but thankfully they know, like, hey, Greg's probably finished for the day. He'll check this tomorrow. You know,
that's cool.
That's probably the best thing to do is just have a team of mods in place that you can trust.
Whether and if communicate you communicate very well to them about
make sure that they know. Yeah, I created essentially a mod handbook for our Discord page, which they just sort of essentially follow to the letter. And if I need to jump in, if I need to intervene during my, you know, out of hours time, then I will. But honestly, it's such a rare thing with them in place that it's hardly ever happened.
So, the topic of mods, these are voluntary mods, right? Moderators
working for free. They're like our let's say our core fans who want to sort of go above and beyond.
Okay. Do you go through them pretty quickly? Do people give it all for 6 months and then realize they're kind of done being a mod, or do you manage to keep them around longer?
It varies. I'd say we have some people who have been modding with me since I first hired mods, so 2022. But yeah, there have been a few other people who've sort of come in and then just sort of like maybe disappeared, become less active and disappeared. And, you know, that's fine. You know, we don't, you know, this is, I don't expect them, I don't expect them to be constantly present and constantly sort of available. So when people are sort of coming in and then you don't hear from them for after a couple of months, it's fine. You know, real life comes first. So
yeah,
it's a bit of a mixture.
Okay. And how do you find these mods, or they find you?
So sometimes they do find me, but a lot of the time, most of the time, it's looking at people who are in the community and saying, these three or four people probably would make good future mods. I'm not going to approach them now, but if we do have some people who do go completely AFK for 3-4 months, then that's fine. They're not coming back and we can look at these people. But yeah, that's probably the best thing to do. It's always having in mind like a couple of, depending on your size of community, like we have like 8,500 people in our Discord. So I have about, I think I have 7 mods now, 6-7 mods, something like that. Oh no, I just did the thing. the stupid 6-7 meme that everyone keeps doing. I have about 6 mods. And and then in my head, I have like maybe 3 or 4 other people who are just part of the community who I think are very level-headed, approachable, and would make good moderators.
Got mods helping out, so this is in your Discord, I assume, right? It's where they mostly are helping.
Yeah, in our Discord, yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
Does it require a lot of ongoing effort from you to manage the mods?
No, not really. There's moderators who are quite new to doing it, but I also have some very experienced moderators. A lot of people compare our game to Subnautica. It's similar in some regards. I actually have like one of Subnautica's lead moderators on my team. He's also a moderator on my server as well. So I know that I can trust these people. That's basically it.
Okay. Thanks for going off onto that tangent about moderators. I know it wasn't something we talked about in advance, but I really think it was very interesting for me to hear about this. It's not something we've talked about before on the podcast.
They're important. They're definitely important to, as a community manager. There's no value that you can put on having a good moderator team.
Yeah. Definitely. So I wanted to hear about tips you might have for first-time community managers, somebody who's just being told, hey, we want to hire you as a community manager and you're starting next week. What are some of the things you would advise for them to do in the first week or two?
Okay. So the first important thing is, I'd probably say, is knowing your brand and your audience. marketing community. It helps you communicate effectively and sort of keeps everything on track. So that's really, really important. When it comes to lots of things, it's understanding, helps talking to players, but also on the marketing side, it helps knowing what YouTubers or streamers to reach out to, which are going to sort of be in line with your brand. Because obviously they're going to then bring community members, sort of players over into your community. So that's really important. I would say build trust and create relationships, when it comes to your community. Be responsive, approachable, show empathy.
Do you mean this to your players or to the studio team?
Oh, sorry, no, this is with the players, sorry. Okay. Yeah. So make sure with your players you're building trust, you are approachable, you show empathy, make sure you show that you listen. Showing that you care, it helps you, especially when it comes to people championing your brand, promoting your company or your game, even when you're not there. That's really important. And also when it comes to your next game, they'll also likely to come along for the ride as well. Make sure you understand the company goals and align your community efforts alongside of that. So for example, establish what metrics, so views, engagement on content that you might create, and make sure that you're basically trying to follow your KPIs and make sure your metrics are in line with what the studio wants. One important thing is manage your time effectively, which is what I touched upon earlier on. We wear many hats as a community manager, especially in indie dev. So make sure you leave enough time to both talk to your community every day in some fashion, whether that be on Discord, whether that be on Steam forums or on social media. But also then make sure you're leaving enough time to do everything else that you need to do. So that might be writing a blog post for next week, or scheduling social media posts or creating content, whatever that might be. That's really important. And then I guess the only other thing really comes to my mind is just being online and chronically online like I am really does help. Be aware of trends that are happening, because sometimes you have to quickly react to trends that are happening, like the example I gave earlier. I would say those are probably the most important things off the top of my head. Yeah.
Okay. On the topic of being online chronically, it's one of those double-edged swords, isn't it?
Yeah.
I mean, you've
got to manage your time effectively, especially when you're a dad like us. But like I'm always checking Twitter, TikTok, whatever it might be, and making note of any trends that I see, so that when I am back at the desk, I'm ready to go. Just you don't have to be chronically online like me, but just be aware and look out for these kind of trends that are happening. That's what I would say.
A few years ago, when we were doing some usability testing with Feature Upvote, one of the standard questions we would ask the test victims, or I don't think victim is the right word, but the test subject, would be roughly how many hours per week are you online? And we had to stop asking it, because people would actually get miserable. They would laugh, but it was kind of this like sad laugh, hiding pain, and they say like, how many hours am I awake? And I just think it's the reality is we're all chronically online, even those of us who try to do something about it.
And you were making people realize this. You make them sit there and think about what you've done. Think about how long you've been scrolling Twitter for, huh? Yeah.
And really the point of the question was just to break the ice, to make them feel comfortable in the situation with a question they could answer easily. So it was doing the opposite thing.
we do a similar thing when we've done like play testing thing with players before. One of the questions we do ask early on, for the same reason as you, is to try and break that ice and get them sort of happy and comfortable, is, how many hours a week do you spend playing video games? And you do sort of see that from a lot of people going, oh, it is upwards of 100 hours. Oh, okay. maybe I need to do something about that. Yeah. So yeah, I know exactly what you mean.
So as somebody working in the industry and with a family, do you get much time to play games yourself?
Not as much as I would like. You would think, working in video games, that a lot of people, especially when you tell extended family members, oh, what is it you do for a living again, Greg? They all assume that I just spend my entire days playing video games. And unfortunately, my son also thought that too, which I had to educate him on and say, no, if you do what dad does, you will not be playing video games all the time. I would like to spend more time playing games, obviously, like anyone, but a lot of the times you're spending more time playing your game, or let's say your inspirational games. But yeah, I don't get me wrong. I do get some time, but it's not like it's not an extra special amount, unfortunately.
What do you mean by inspirational games? Games that inspire the game you're working on, or?
Yes, that exactly that. Yeah. So for example, when Forever Skies was in development, our three main inspirational titles were Raft, Green Hell, and also Subnautica. Raft was probably the most important one because it had a very similar game loop to what we were going for. So a lot of the times you would play those games, see what's working, see what's not working. And for me, from a marketing perspective, or from a community management perspective, I'd play these games to understand what it is that's working well, so I could know what content to make. It's going to make, for example, other Raft fans want to come and check out Forever Skies. That's typically what they do. And now we are now working on a second project. I'm focusing mostly on Forever Skies post-launch support at the minute, but we have people in the team who are checking out, let's say, our new inspirational titles right now for our next project, which I can't talk anything about. Okay.
I won't push you on that then.
Not yet. Maybe we can do this in a year or two's time.
Maybe we'll have you back on the show. Greg, we're running out of time. We haven't gone through half the stuff I wanted to, but that's because we were going off some really interesting tangents.
That's my fault. I do that a lot. I do tangents a lot. That's me, man. Sorry.
It makes the podcast easy when you do. Final and most important question. So you said you don't play games much, but when you are playing games on your own free time, what have you been playing lately?
So I'm sort of in that limbo stage where I just finished. So after it won everything at Game Awards, I thought, well, I better check out Expedition 33 and see what all the fuss is about. I did that and I devoured it in 6 days.
which
goes against everything that I just said about not playing games as much as I would like.
Was it as good as they say?
It was absolutely incredible. Just as good as they say. It deserves all the awards that it got. And I can't be sour about it. it's absolutely phenomenal experience, from its writing, from its art direction, to its gameplay, to its story, to its world building. Oh my. Yeah. And so I finished that and I'm doing a bit of the extra content. And I've tried to start something new and I just find myself bouncing off a few other things, because it's like that game should come with a warning. Like, anything you play after this is just going to feel subpar by comparison. So, I have started actually playing something, because I'm a big survival horror fan. And so I have actually started playing an indie horror game called Tormented Souls 2, which is made by a small studio. Yeah, it's for people who like classic sort of PS2 era survival horrors, like Silent Hill, Resident Evil, Silent Hill. Actually, it's very much like Resident Evil 1 remake and Resident Evil 0. It's very similar to that, for people who like those kind of games. So I have that as one thing that has actually stuck. So I'd say that is my answer. It took a long time to get there, but I'd say what I have been playing is Tormented Souls 2. Yeah.
I want to play, the name's just gone from my mind, the French game you just mentioned.
Expedition 33, Clair Obscur.
Thank you, Expedition 33. I had it on the Xbox. I think I played like the first 10 minutes of it and thought, this looks good. I'm going to put this aside until I have time to dedicate on it. And that was like 6 months ago. I think I need to come back to it. I don't know where to fit it in though.
No, it's really difficult, right? There's just so many great games coming out. And I'm not a turn-based guy. I've never been a JRPG guy either. Like, that's why I completely overlooked it when it first came out. And I heard everybody else gushing about it. I was like, yeah, I might check it out eventually. But I was never that guy. And, well, this has certainly opened my eyes to that whole genre. So I need to start looking back now. I've got a whole JRPG catalog that I need to look back through and go, maybe I need to give FF10 a go, FF7 original, you know.
You've got 30 years of gaming history there.
So much to get through.
Greg, that's all we have time for today. So thank you again for being on the show.
Thank you. It was really a pleasure being here.
And where can listeners get in touch if they'd like to know more about what we've discussed today?
They can find me on LinkedIn if you want to talk sort of more professionally. That's just my name, Greg Cummings. Should be able to find me on there. And if you want to find me on social media, probably the best place is Blue Sky right now. That's probably where I'm spending most of my time. So that is just at Nowhere Near Berlin, which is my online, alias name. Which is my Discord, my PlayStation, my everything. So yeah, Nowhere Near Berlin.
We all have one. I'll make sure that both of those, LinkedIn and Blue Sky, are in the show notes. I'm also on Blue Sky, so I'm going to go and connect with you after we finish recording.
Awesome.
Thanks again. Well, bye, Greg.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Bye, everyone.
Thanks again for listening to this episode of The Community Lounge. If you enjoyed this episode, please spread the word and share it with friends and colleagues who you think would also enjoy it. You can find all the episodes on your favorite podcasting platform or at featureupvote.com/thecommunitylounge.